Welcome to the USA Hockey Magazine podcast, the voice of hockey in America, with your host, Harry Thompson, editor of USA Hockey Magazine.
Welcome to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast. We are joined this morning by Mike Snee, the executive director of College Hockey, Inc. Mike is calling us from Erie, Pennsylvania, the site of the annual Icebreaker Tournament, which kicks off tonight. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You're in beautiful Erie right now. I'm looking right out at Lake Erie and Presque Isle, so excited to see my first college hockey of the season tonight.
You know, Mike, this is such an exciting time of year with the start of another college hockey season. You know, you've been doing this for a long time. You're obviously a Minnesota guy, so obviously, you know, hockey's in your blood. What is it about it gets you excited this time of year?
What I get most excited at the beginning of the college hockey season, actually, is to watch the freshmen. First off, you look at them, especially in a night like tonight, where many of them will be playing their first college hockey game, and it's a bit of a dream realized, I think, for a number of those players. And then many come in with a lot of accolades, and you know who they are, so you're excited to see them. But then there's always a handful that, play beyond their expectations, and it's exciting to see that. So I think at the start of the year, it's most importantly just being able to watch hockey again, because it's been a long few months since we've had it. But the start of the year, to me, is most noted for watching those freshmen play their first games.
Absolutely. Hey, is any new changes to college hockey this year? Any new rules or policies or anything like that is going to make the game even better?
Well, there's been some overtime changes and then changes to the overtime changes. So we could have a separate podcast on the overtime changes and how they came about. That kept us all interested in the off season, but there's been the standardization of the overtime. But other than that, nothing that I would say is going to be too noteworthy from that standpoint. Nothing that is occurring right now in the NFL. So I think now the game's just going to be as good as it was in previous years. And I think the way that there's a bit of a who knows what's going to happen this year feeling amongst the teams. There's no one team that feels like it's separated itself. So I feel it's going to be another great season.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, recently your organization released some figures showing the number of Americans going north to play major junior hockey has declined for the third straight year. Why do you think there are fewer Americans heading to the CHL?
That's a good question. I think there's a lot of answers to it. And, our view on things is to ensure that players, you know, just maintain their eligibility until they decide. So we really hone in on the young players. And by young, meaning like 16, 17 years old, making sure that that those younger players understand their options and when is the right time to make their decision. So I think what's helped us is where those players play at that time. I truly believe that people have always appreciated how good college hockey is, how good the schedule is for you in terms of a lot of practice time, a lot of time in the weight room, and then great, you know, weekend series every weekend that have the games are so intense that are like a mini playoff series every weekend. But what I think has been our challenge, and depending on where you are in the country, more of a challenge, is what do you play before college hockey? So I believe that the perception of those places of where you play, and that could be anywhere from our junior league partners like the USHL and the North American League, to the prep schools out east, to maybe some midget hockey in much of the country, and then in Minnesota in particular, high school hockey, that collection of places to play before college hockey, the perception of it has grown. I think it's always been really good, but I think the perception of it in some places, and the best example I'd have for that is in the Michigan area. I don't live there, so I can't say that I know for certain what the perception's like, but I feel like the idea of playing 18U hockey or even high school hockey in Michigan is thought of a little higher today than it was a few years ago. And we did some research to look at where the Michigan natives playing college hockey, where they spent their time before college hockey. And surprisingly to some people, most of them play either 18U midget or high school hockey. But if you asked people a few years ago, I think that they would think that not many do. So to give you a long answer, I think that those leagues and where to play before college hockey, the perception has gone up, and kudos to USA Hockey, especially with those junior leagues. So people feel a lot better about where they're playing their 17, 18, and sometimes 19-year-old hockey. So they feel better about remaining eligible and ultimately finding their way to a campus.
Absolutely. Well, it seems like you've been effective in your messaging, because one of the other pieces of data that you recently released shows the number of 16-year-olds in the CHL is going down. So it looks like your message is getting through.
Yeah, there were nine 16-year-olds nine American 16-year-olds in the CHL this year, and that's down from up about 16 a few years ago, and so on. So again, it's that younger player and making sure that this notion that I think we all have, which is to get on a fast track and speed things up. And I think there's enough evidence out there that proves that you really can't do that. So understand the process, understand the pace of it, and then, you know, appreciate the options that you have. And, you know, even in Minnesota, where they've got this, you know, high school hockey has really entrenched itself, I think the perception of that started to slip a little bit as people started to hear from what I would just call outside voices. And I give some credit to the people in Minnesota. They've made sure that they've marketed the effectiveness of the high school hockey and, you know, what connects with that, the Elite League and stuff. And so even there, they were fighting it a little bit. But now you look at the numbers, and it's turning, trending upwards there too. So, yeah, with that young player, generally, I think if you just keep your head down and play hockey where you are, and you know, you're not going to be able to hide yourself, because these college coaches, they find players everywhere, and that's exciting. I mean, when you look at where the players are coming from now, playing Division I hockey, it's not just Massachusetts, Michigan, and Minnesota. It's literally every state in the country.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Mike, you have another great selling point for college hockey is that this year's NHL opening night rosters featured a record 209 NCAA alumni. That just must make your job a little easier selling the benefits of college hockey for those athletes who have aspirations of playing at the highest level.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that is certainly understood and appreciated, and not even just with players, but you can just see the coaches that are. I saw Coach David Quinn won his first NHL game last night with Jim Montgomery, and a few years ago Dave Haxtell. So it's not just the players; it's the coaches as well, and. So I think people realize that being at an NCAA institution is a pretty magical place for any athlete, not just a hockey player. The resources made available to you, the competition component. I sometimes laugh. I look at these players on Elite Prospects, and you know, they'll play 90 games as a 15-year-old, and they'll play 45 games as a 20-year-old. And I think that practice to game ratio that we all strive for is so important. It's really met in college with that schedule of four practices and training days plus two games a week and then a day of recovery. So it's pretty special, and I think that if that ever was a secret, the secret's completely out, and the NHL's onto it. So that number will just continue to grow. And it's also speaks to how successful hockey in the United States is and has become, and, you know, has been that way for quite a while. Close to 80% of, or close to 70% of college hockey players are American. So it's just another support, or another point of support for how good Americans are at hockey.
Absolutely. So another thing, I'll keep referring to the data, because, I mean, the job that you and Nate Ewell do over at College Hockey Inc. is just amazing. So you guys always provide some great information. You also had data that showed that 63 players who left school early, only 15 of them made an opening night roster. Does that kind of give you a little bit more ammunition to kind of encourage players to slow it down, to enjoy their time in college, to really work on their development, and maybe not be in such a rush to get to that next level?
It certainly does, and I would say that's probably the case for all levels of hockey. And that idea of speeding things up and and perhaps going sooner than you should, whether it's youth hockey, high school hockey, junior hockey, college hockey, minor league hockey. It's so tempting, and it's always there. So we produce this information, and we provide it to our coaches for their conversations with players that get the itch to want to pursue their pro career. And, you know, we certainly want them to, and we market the heck out of our players that do well beyond college once they move into pro hockey. But I think there's enough evidence, strong evidence, in the data that just shows that that leaving school early, especially before you've played 3 years, is it's real hard to make an NHL roster. And as you just pointed out, most of the players that have left early in the past 2 years have not found their way onto an NHL, or were not on an NHL opening night roster. So, and that's pretty consistent when you go back and look, not just the past 2 years, but you go back and look over the past 10 to 15 years. So I would say exactly what you just said is enjoy your time in college hockey. The NHL will be there. And one thing college hockey can do is allow you to get that, I guess, man's body, because when you step into the NHL, suddenly you're not just playing players, you know, a couple years older or younger than you. You're playing guys who are 29 years old and have had a 7-year head start in the weight room. So you have to be prepared.
No doubt, no doubt. And Mike, can you talk a little bit about the legislative proposals that are on the table for maybe altering the way players are recruited for college hockey, especially at an early age?
Yeah, and that's that just entered the legislative cycle within the past couple of weeks. It was presented a few months ago. There's a men's ice hockey recruiting committee that was put together, and they brought forward these changes, or these proposed changes, in how the recruiting and the committing process and the commitment to school, the committing process would go about. And the two highlights really are no recruiting conversations will be allowed to begin until January 1st of a player's sophomore year in high school. And then no verbal commitment, so no verbal offer of financial aid is what it would technically be called, can be made until August 1st prior to a potential student-athlete's junior year in high school. So that's slowing that aspect down quite a bit. As you've probably seen, Harry, we've had players as young as 14 years old and several 15 and 16-year-olds committing to schools, verbally committing to schools. They can't sign a national letter of intent until their senior year, and that will still remain the case. But all of these verbal commitments that are being made. And I think having it feel like it gets younger every year, and truthfully, this is not just a hockey issue. This is almost every sport in every NCAA sport. But we want to be leaders in this, and we want to address this. We don't feel that there are many benefits to this early recruiting and committing, and it creates a lot of issues, not just for the athletes doing it, but for the athletes' peer group. And all of a sudden, you know, the tone, you'll hear a 16-year-old suggest that, you know, he's not being noticed by schools and he's starting to panic and perhaps make bad decisions. And you want to say to him, you're 16 years old. You know, you shouldn't know what school you're going to go yet. You shouldn't necessarily even be having those conversations. So those are the two main pieces to it, is recruiting conversations would not be able to occur until January 1st of their sophomore year, and then no verbal commitments until August 1st prior to their junior year. And we hope that this legislation will take hold and will pass sometime between now and the spring, likely in the month of April is when that will occur.
What's been the sense that you've received from college coaches around the country that maybe you've talked to? Because it seems to me like in talking to some of them in the past and reading some of the things that they said is that they all think something needs to change, but they also understand that they had to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. They had to basically play that game just like the other coaches. So are they in favor of this these changes?
It's a, you know, it's a group of 60 institutions, so it wouldn't be accurate to say every single person's on the same page, but I do give the collective body a lot of kudos, simply because, I mean, they are leaders in this. They're one of the first organizations to step forward and say we need to collectively change this, because I think you're right. If if one person does it, then pretty much everyone has. You know, if one person recruits early, then the next person has to, and the next person has to. So it is the type of thing where everyone's doing it, so nobody's to blame, but therefore everybody's to blame. So I think everyone realizes that this is that the current way it's going is not the best aspect of college hockey by any means. There are so many wonderful things about college hockey. A 14-year-old committee. And a 14-year-old receiving a verbal offer is not one of those things. And that if we just let it play itself out, it's going to get younger. It's not going to get older. And that's a trend, not just in hockey, but in all of college sports. So we're hopeful that by taking this, I think, pretty big step, that it will turn it in the other direction. And then back to, you know, our earlier piece about wanting our young players to not feel the constant need to get on the fast track and try to speed things up, which you really can't do, that suddenly this might help with that and slow down the whole process of youth hockey, because the idea that you're behind if you haven't committed at age 15 will go away, because no 15-year-old will have committed.
Right, absolutely. Well, that's great. That's great news. And then, Mike, the last question I have for you is in over the last several years, you know, the success of programs such as Penn State and now Arizona State, you know, has really, you know, helped college hockey immensely. Have you heard or do you see other schools, especially let's say out west, who are looking at what Arizona State's been able to accomplish and maybe looking to add Division I hockey to their curriculum?
Yes. So that's a great subject, and that's something that College Hockey Inc. is spending a lot more time on, certainly than we did when the organization started a few years back, is trying to assist other schools in adding hockey. And just last year, we entered into a partnership with the National Hockey League and the National Hockey League Players Association, and they see the value to growing college hockey, and not just in the numbers, but in the locations and spreading it to all the corners of the country. And so they, the league and the Players Association, will fund the feasibility studies for any school that wants to look into adding Division I hockey. And through that partnership with those two organizations, we have been able to do five feasibility studies so far, the highest profile one of which is the University of Illinois. And in working with the University of Illinois, it's been a fun experience. It's a long experience, as you can imagine, but they are still progressing, we believe, towards eventually adding Division I hockey. And there's a few other schools that are also in the pursuit of it. They're doing it in a confidential nature, so I can't share the name of the school. But then we have other schools, too, that because of this project and the awareness for the project have contacted us and want to be considered to do a study in the future. So that's our hope. I can say right now none of them are on the far west coast, the Pacific Ocean, and ultimately are, you know, everybody, it seems like every time I talk about this subject and I'm talking about it more and more, people want growth everywhere, but in particular they'd really love to see it out west. And I think what they, you know, with Arizona State being the first Pac-12 school to add hockey, there's this thought, and I think about it a lot, that what if five other Pac-12 schools decided to add hockey and suddenly we had the Pac-12 championship? So as I tell people, I think the dream here is that someday we've got USC playing UCLA and Oregon playing Washington in critical Pac-12 late season series in February with the Pac-12 championship on the line. That's somewhat the vision, and so now we're trying to take the steps to get there. And Penn State a few years back, Arizona State a few years ago, and now hopefully Illinois. So maybe we're at the point now where we can say college hockey growth is becoming a trend.
Nice. Well, you know, you got so many great hockey players in the state of Illinois that it seems like that would make a lot of sense, and it would be a heck of a program if it can get going.
And it's, you know, the United States, we're a college sports culture. We see that every Saturday with college football, and we see it with our Frozen Four and with basketball's Final Four and stuff. So I think a way to further the growth of hockey in the country, which, you know, USA Hockey has done so much to grow the sport in our country. The NHL has done a lot by putting teams into newer hockey markets in the southern part of the country. But college hockey, for the most part, has not necessarily done its fair share. So I think it's time for us to do that by just simply growing and then also growing in strategic areas. And if suddenly, as I mentioned earlier, if Oregon was playing Washington in a college hockey series this weekend, there'd be a lot of young people falling in love with the sport, and a few of those might eventually make their way to the highest levels, but all of them, you know, can enjoy the sport and be involved in it and get their children eventually in the sport. So that's really our purpose for wanting to grow college hockey, is just to further grow the sport in our country.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, under your leadership, you can see it's college hockey is in good hands, and it's doing some great things. We want to really thank you for taking the time to talk today, and want to wish you the best of luck this year, and hopefully you'll come back and join us again maybe at the end of the year, and we can recap another successful college hockey season.
I appreciate that. I'd love to be a semi-regular on the show, and I also need to be certain that everyone understands we're a three-person organization, and Nate Ewell, who you mentioned earlier, and then Brent Darnell. Those guys do tremendous work. I learn a lot from both Nate and Brent every day, and it's a fun group to be part of. So I appreciate the kind words.
Good deal. Well, Mike, thanks again for joining us, and thanks everybody for listening to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast.
You've been listening to another USA Hockey Magazine podcast, produced by Norman Hayward and Jeff Carpenter. Be sure to follow us on USAHockeyMagazine.com, as well as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for listening.